So actually, I'll talk about this a simple idea we come up. Before I do that, I want to actually thank the organizers for suggesting this discussion, especially Neil Razhovsky. Unfortunately, he's not here. And also Dimov put on the website. So Neil has worked a lot on the spin imbalance. So let me give you a little background how this this idea is based on. So it's based on the optical lattice and spin imbalance fermi gases. So you need both. Then you put both together. I will show you how you can get a new P wave pairing without the P wave interaction. One of the huge advantage, let me just summarize to begin with, one of the huge advantage is that the critical temperature associated with this class of pairing phase is in the same class as the S wave pairing. So that's orders magnitude, you know, several orders magnitude higher than the conventional P wave plus P wave pairing based on the P wave coupling. So I will talk about this whole thing in three steps. First, I will introduce the basic model. It's actually very idealized model. So in step one, I just want to show the principle how this kind of new pairing can be possible. Then I will compare this new paired phase with the conventionally well-known P plus IP. And what is the difference? I want to show you in the basic way, in the sense, for example, what is the coefficients in the BDG equation? And what is the BCS-like wave function? So I compare the two wave functions. So then you'll see what is the big difference, right? So why it's different. Then I will, on the step three, actually I will talk about the origin of the topology of this phase and where does it come from. So I just want to give a qualitative understanding for this whole thing. So I decided not to use the slides. Instead, I'm going to use the boards. And I want to tell you that most arguments are hand-waving. The goal is to make things very simple and clear. I don't want to write the long equations and the big matrix, the numericals and the cartoon pictures. Instead, I'll simplify the whole thing. Okay, let me start with the step one. It's a proof of principle. I want to introduce a model which is very unlikely to be realizable. However, if you trust quantum mechanics, mathematics, and a little bit hard working, you realize that has to lead to something like a P wave phase. So that's actually the idea. And later on near the maybe say step four, if we have time, I'll talk about how we realize, and there will be new models and actually more realistic models to be set up in the code admin system. So the basic idea, as I indicated in the beginning, to think about this model, you need two ingredients based on the recent developments in code atoms. One is spin imbalance, Fermi gases. The second one is the lattice formed by laser beams. Think about that. Suppose you start with the lattice, put atoms on the lattice formed by coherent laser beams. Let me use the one-dimensional picture. And the whole physics, in fact, is based on 2D, because we need like a P plus IP, PX plus IPY phase, so it's two-dimensional. So here I'm going to draw a one-dimensional picture to illustrate. So think about you put two kinds of atoms, say I call it spin up and down on lattice. Suppose this is spin up. And of course I have if I solve this single particle band structure, you will get the, so on each lattice side, you'll get a tau states. And this is what I would call, this is S, and this is P, and you call it PX. This is the one PX if you're talking about one dimension, right? And what I'm going to do is that, okay, I'm going to line up my chemical potential right here. My chemical potential for the spin up species is somewhere here in the S band. Because this S band, I'll draw another picture, will be broadened when you a lot of tunneling. Okay, so this gives you a picture. Let me just draw a momentum space. Okay, this epsilon s. Let me just cut in the Bernoulli zone in x direction. So this will be the boundary, say, on a lattice constant pi over a. And this will look like something like this. Right, so this is the S-band. Let me prepare. Okay? And I want to have my chemical potential, say, somewhere here. So those particles, let's spin up, those particles occupy the bottom bow of the spectrum, right? Now, what about the spin down particles? I still assume I'm going to have the same lattice, okay? This is S and the P. So this is for the spin down. The difference here is I want to control my chemical potential such that my mu down is actually in the P band. So what that means is if I translate into this picture, so I still have the S band. It's really become perpendicular. And I have a P band. So my chemical potential, say, is somewhere here. Okay, this is the PX band. So, of course, here is all filled. You fill all the particles all the way up to the P band. So there's no decay problem for fermions. And you know, in Hamburg, Andreas Hamburg has done a lot of work for the P band bosons, in which case he kind of like keep the bosons artificially high in energy, in the sense he keep the reservoir, so the particle jump, you know, tunnel to the P band instead of the S. So there's a decay later on with some time roughly like 100 milliseconds longer. So he can maintain the P band population for bosons by having a reservoir next by. That's how he achieved it. But for fermions, you just have to say, in this case, assume you have, say, 1.5 particles per site. That corresponds to your complete field S band. And this is the PX band. You fill up to here, right? So then you're assuming that the interaction, typically assuming in a Hamiltonian, there's a, say, Hubbard U-turn between the spin up in S and the spin down in the PX, and there will be a lot of turn. We switch X to P to Y because there are two components in the two dimension. All right. So you have interaction between up and down, assuming this is attractive. Okay. Then remember, we have to recognize that the interaction only happens between the spin up and down. There's no interaction within the same orbits, because originally you assume the carbonyl only happens between two species, not within the same species. That's very important. And so this U term comes from originally the S wave interaction, and very commonly it comes from on-site contact interaction, right? So that's just very normal. And the people can tune out by Fischer resonance, so that's not a problem. So then you come back to this picture, you have a lot of particles near the Fermi surface here, here, and here. If your interaction is humongously strong, in a sense you're not going to form a simple molecule, right? So such that, you know, your interaction is smaller than the band gap between S and the P. So what happens is actually the interaction will not be able to pair the particle between the S in the downspin. This is a downspin. This is up. and the S-band in the up-spin. Instead, you should pair the particles near the respective firm surfaces. That means you pair the particle from down on the P-band and the particle in the S-band from the spin up. So that's actually what happened. You're going to have pairing between S and the P, between spin up and down. So it's more like a spin singlet pairing, but there's no spin symmetry in this case. I mean, you only have a SZ symmetry, there's no SU2 spin symmetry. So they have a total particle conservation, you have a SZ symmetry. And you can say another way, it's like you have two separate conservation laws, because N up, this corresponding to N up and N down, and both are conserved quantities. You can think of the total N is constant, and also the difference, we call it SZ, is constant, it's the same thing, right? So you only have these two conservation law, means you have a charge U1 symmetry and a spin U1 symmetry, but there's no spin SU2. So in other sense, you can think about the Cooper pair I will write down soon, is a spin up and down symmetry, but there's no exchange symmetry because the spin is attached to the orbits. Because you only take the spin up from the S and the spin down from the P, and there's no spin down from the S. So then, anyway, so this is the idea. So if you think you would have a two order parameters, let me write down here. So C is the operator for fermions. Say you have up S. Let me just write in this way. So C down PX. Let me write this is delta X. This is the Cooper pair. Yes.
But should I not have, say, 3P wave
orbitals? Oh, because I'm thinking about the two-dimensional? That's a very good question. So in principle, you have 3P orbits. However, I'm assuming a quarter two-dimensional lattice. Oh. It's like my PZ is high above. That means my potential depth in the Z direction is stronger. So I have a symmetry in the XY plane. For example, I could assume a default symmetry,
right?
And I don't have the full rotational, like an O8 symmetry, this kind of things. So I have a square lattice symmetry, not the cubic lattice. So you have two order parameters. Okay. These two components, of course, are, in general, independent, unless you have some kind of interaction or some other cross-tunneling between X and Y. So you have to mix these two things, either by some kind of interaction or by the tunneling. So in our model, it's actually because in a single particle level, you already kind of like have a cross-tunneling. So I will show you a lattice picture soon. So between PX and PY, and that's actually the reason from a single particle side that you already have a mechanism to lock the phase. So let me summarize the idea. So what happens is actually you can have a situation, this is real, say, this is just the difference, phase difference, is a pi over 2 phase difference, relative phase. In the model, I will present soon. So this is already the sketch of that model. So in this idea, you can find out, you know, you only require the S wave interaction, which can be very strong. And you do need to make the particles on the lattice. That means you have the cool fermions on the lattice. And in the same time, actually, you have to tune a imbalance such that, in particular, in this rotation, we're assuming the majority is the downspin. So you have more particle in the spin-down species than the particle in the up. And in the cold atom system, this is relatively easy because you have two separate conservation laws. So for electrons, that are corresponding to a huge effective magnetic field, which is corresponding to the band gap. So in the kinesmatic materials, that kind of magnetic field is not possible, I think. Yeah. So this is actually an idea, basic idea, why you can have a kind of P wave. So one of the keys that the P comes from the single particle band structure. So let me compare, start comparing a little bit with the conventional P wave, superconductivity, or superfluidic hidden string. In a conventional P wave case, you ask the interaction to do two things. One is to, you know, form a pair and condense. And the second thing, you have to rely on the interaction to provide this P wave structure, non-trivial in the space when you do the rotation. But here, we only ask the interaction to do one thing, that is just to form the pair and condense. So when the interaction is strong enough, and you're going to just form the pair. And the P wave structure comes from the single particle nature. All right, so this is the key. Actually, this model so far is a problem. As you can see, in the one dimension, it's relatively easy to match the Fermi points in this case. But in a two dimension, because you have two different bands, the Fermi surface are not in the same structure. So if you don't match the S Fermi surface with that of the P, your pairing got to be negligible, right? Cannot happen. So you need like a Fermi surface nesting condition in order to really have a cool pair, right? So that's actually the key. For this conventional S wave BCS, which is very easy, you just pair P and the minus P in the momentum space because you have the Cramer's, because the P and the minus P due to the time reversal symmetry, it's always degenerate, right? So then you always have this kind of degenerate states available. And in this case, it's not the same. So this is, comes to a larger kind of like I call it idealized model. So let me draw the two-dimensional case and illustrate the problem. So let me just erase this part now. If I take this one and look at the P wave and the S band, I mean the P band and S band Fermi surface in the 2D, you'll find the problem. So let me just say this is the Kx and the Ky. And this is the Bernoulli zone for the square lattice. Okay. And suppose I'm at half filling. Assumed. So then roughly speaking, your S band. This is S. Spin up species would have this kind of Fermi surface. It's like a diamond, roughly speaking, with a little bit curve if you really include higher, you know, tunnelings. All right? I mean, also depends on the filling. This is the case at half filling. So it looks like it's diamond. What about the P band? You can do the same thing to plot. This is the Ky and the Kx. So you'll find out the P band, as you can see, you feel from the edge. So that's why your Fermi surface for the x, for the Px. This is the Fermi surface for the Px. This is down species. And likewise, you get the Fermi surface for the y. They're roughly speaking straight lines. This is the P, Y. Okay? So the straight line is because the particle for in the P band tunnels much faster in, say, in the PX band tunnels much faster in X than Y. So it's anisotropic. So it's kind of almost no dispersion in Y direction, only has dispersion in the X for the Px particle. And for the y particle, it's just the other way around, just like rotated by 90 degrees. So this is the Fermi surface structure. Then you realize this diamond will not match with that square. But what if you rotate this diamond by 45 degrees? Then you have a kind of nesting condition. OK, that's actually the idea. So if you come up with something like this, for the spin up, say, let me draw the sublattice structure like this. Those are the places you have particles. This is for the spin up. For the spin down, I think Fairbairn is very happy, especially when you do the numerical simulation. This will be the model you start with. So then for the spin down, you have, say, particles everywhere. Let me call this as A and B. So there are two sublattices. For the spin down, I'm going to fill both A and B sides. For the spin up, I only fill the A sides. There's no particle in the B, only in the A. That's actually an idea. So effectively, in this case, in this lattice, because if you look the occupation sides, it's still a square lattice, but it's 45 degree rotated. So in that case, you actually effectively rotate this one back to the normal direction, because they square. So that's actually how you actually have the a frame surface nesting condition, then you can go ahead to have a pair. So if you go ahead, take this model, assuming this is such a term, if you do some either mean field theory or do a perturbation theory to calculate the Gitzberg-Landau theory, you actually can prove in many ways. In the weak carbon limit, you can have a two kinds of P wave phase. One we call the real, that is the relative phase between x, y components is zero or pi. The second class is the, what we call the P plus IP case, in which we call the complex phase, the relative phase is pi over 2. All right. So the real phase means that the overall phase can be gauged away. So that's the idea. So there will be two possibilities. Let me just summarize. You can have a case when both are real, apart from overall phase, right? Or they can have a relative phase. That's what we call the P plus IP. So there will be two phases, two super fluid phases. So one is actually, say, Px plus minus Py without I. Another one is Px plus minus I Py. This is the case. So depending on the parameter, especially this one, for example, there will be a particle state. Let me just say, this is Tononian T3. This is changed from X to Y state. And so this particle tunnels in this direction is T1. Especially when you do the numerical calculation. So this will be larger one, so this is T2. So typically T2 is very small because it's transverse. The overlap is smaller, and T1 is bigger, and this one is stronger. And this one is T0, we call it. And T0 and T3 are comparable, and this term is very useful and important because you mix X and Y components. That's actually the reason why they are not independent. So you kind of lock the phase from the single particle level. So we are trying to do as much as with a single particle and only ask the interaction to do a very limited amount of job. So that's actually about the basic idea in the model.
Your basic assumption is here that you can do a spin-dependent lattice to do this rotation?
Right. That's a huge challenge.
Okay.
Yeah.
It may cause some heating.
Exactly.
All of these things. But at the same time, this also fixes the problem that you have different hopping for the S and the P band, and it allows you to match it, right?
Yeah, so you fix the problem in which the frame surfaces do not match. If you allow spin-dependent lattice, then you can match the frame surfaces. If you don't use the spin-dependent lattices, if you just take a simple square lattice, you cannot match the frame surfaces.
But in principle, in the original model, you also had actually a different hopping.
Yes.
The S and the P.
Yes, yes.
So the spin-dependent lattice also gives you, by taking different intensity, the ability to change the hopping, and therefore take the same mass, so solve the mass problem?
That's not a problem, actually. So the T's cannot, you don't have two T, like I say, this is a T0. So the you don't have to require T0 and the T1 to be closed. It's not needed. The key is to make the firm surfaces. Basically, you want to make sure those lines. Okay, let me just back up a little bit. When you change the, just look at this picture. The bandwidth is given by T0 here, and here is given by T1. So when you change the ratio T1 T0, you only change the, the bandwidth. You're not really changing the location that much. I mean, they're not changing the firm surface location that much. So that's not going to be so important.
Is there not sort of the maximum value of the difference between your hoppings that you can tolerate? Otherwise, you lose.
Yes. Okay. So the reason, the one thing we don't like is actually, the super free doesn't like is T2. Because if you have this T2, this tunneling, then this one is not a, I think it's something like this one. It's either this way or that way, I don't remember exactly. So this one is not a straight line, instead I think it goes like a little bit curve. So if it's a curve, then you have to match with this one. Of course, this one can be also curved if you change the doping. So it's a more like a technical question. So that means you change your fitting, you change the shape of your firm surface. So you are right, when you change the T's, the matching condition may not be the best. So that means there will be, depends on the doping, the fitting, and also all the T's. And you can optimize where the maximum matching condition can occur, and that's the point where the super free, say, gap function is the best. So that's actually indeed is right. But that's but you can always tune that in principle. Yeah, so that's very important. But this, as Peter pointed out, very important, this idealized model has a strong requirement that it's spin dependent lattice to, for the atoms, which is a very difficult requirement for most atoms, like say Lithium 6 or this alkali metal atoms, because the fine structure, as I learned from Peter, you can use some way to generate spin dependent lattice. But if the fine structure constant, fine structure splitting is too small, then it's not much room to tune the difference. Yes?
I'm sorry, but I feel a little bit like that's a slightly stronger condition than what you're showing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not so much that it'd be spin dependent, but that the P-band hopping, the P-band lattice support these extra states, right?
Oh, so the important, okay, let me just explain again. I think that Jake is asking. So the spin dependence is like this. We assume the spin up only occupy the A sites, not on the B sites. That means for the spin up, B has to be a kind of a potential maximum instead of minimum. And here, you allow A and the B are here. Basically, you're saying, okay, you're basically the, it's like a low points, high point, low points. So instead of the B is a minimum for the spin down case, here you actually, if you plot the potential along, say, in this line, low, high, low, right? That's actually the high point. So you actually realize, if you think about spin down, you actually need a low, low, low. The high point is actually on the bond center, right? So then you realize, these two potential, let me call it V up, V down, which are periodic potential in the space, are not identical. They are spin dependent, right? So that is actually, to do that, it's difficult in experiments. So let me just jump to this part of four. Actually, what happened, we discovered a lot of new lattice. You don't need to spin dependent. That's no longer an issue. So that's actually what Randy Hewlett is planning now to do the experiment. Yeah. So that's actually that's a great question, but this spin dependent thing is just for illustration. Oh, by the way, this whole thing is actually in the paper. And myself in the Nature Communication. So there's a lot more details over there you can look up. I hope this is clear with this model so far. All right. So then you wonder, how do we think about the, the BDG equation, or especially the wave function, compared with the conventional P plus IP. So what is the difference? Right. So I think by doing that, you will see, especially I'm going to show you the U's and the V's, like we all know, those coefficients to parameterize the wave function. And once you know the U's and the V's in the BCS wave function, you actually can see, difference between this and that wave function. So let me write down that part now. So let me just erase this part here. So let me remind you the typical, maybe I don't have time. Let me first introduce our state, write down the many-body wave function. Then you actually can, for most of you, I guess you already know what is the conventional P plus IV state. So in our case, let me write down the superfluid wave function. So for the center of mass, so in our case, we have two components. I call it delta x, delta y. So let me define the order permit in the momentum space. We're going to write down the many body wave function in the k space. So it's better working in the momentum space. So let me define, say, bk is ck s up k and cp down is x minus k plus a q. Actually, this q in the half-filling case is actually pi pi for the square lattice, the two square lattice models, okay? Okay, just prop is not so important. So let me call this is the bx of k, and then you have by of k. X goes to y, okay? And this is evaluated with respect to some kind of a, let me call it a vacuum state. This is the, not the vacuum state, the ground state of this superfluid phase, okay? and then this is the case when you have a, have this, the order permit in the momentum space. Then what is the many body wave function? Let me just write it down. So the wave function is something like this. So this is more like a hand waving. I'm not going to solve that exactly because there's a here you have A and the B, and say on the A sides you have two orbits, PX, PY. So for each unit cell you have two sides A and the B, so as you have four P states and one S, so it's a five dimensional problem. So it's a five by, if you think about the BDG equation, that the BDG Hamiltonian will be five by five matrix, or you can double that, the space, that will be 10 by 10. So here, let me just say, a product of K, it's very usual, UK plus VK, okay.
Vincent?
Yes?
Once again, so why do you need the super lattice in the down? So for the up, it's clear that you want to rotate the Fourier surface, but why do you need also super lattice for the down?
Oh, you, okay, for the down is not a super lattice. For the up, yes. So it's like it's the same lattice, I just label them by A and the B sides. For the down spin, it's just the regular lattice without, you know, two sub lattices are equivalent, right? But then in this case, the for the spin up, they only occupy the A sides, not the B sides. So the sub lattice structure. So it's like introduce an idea of sub lattices to compare two spins. That's actually an idea. So it allows you to formulated problem, right? So for the spin down, it just it has its own square lattice. But I want to match the size. You know, this size, so this lattice constant, this is 2a, this is a. That's actually the idea, all right. So this will be, let me just write, I think this is the vx. This is a function k. This is the k. This will be up S of K Px down minus K plus Q and plus I times Vy. This occupy, I mean apply on the vacuum. Vacuum is defined by the following: C S is all zero. So the vacuum is annihilated by this original fermion. Original fermion operators. So this is the key. So for the P plus IP phase, this is the P plus IP phase. Not the real P wave, just the complex P wave case. Also we call the chiral phase. The key is actually assuming all the coefficients by proper gauge transformation can be chosen real. I just want to illustrate that there's phase difference here between the two components, X and Y. Okay? And what that means is actually for the conventional, okay, let me back a little bit. So here, if I plug in, what is BK? Let me know if I make mistakes. I think what you get is U star of function K times VX of K. And this will be U star. And there's an I here, Vy of K. Okay? So that will be the very important result. So in terms of the U's and the V's, you actually find out, you know, these two components are written in terms of different weights. And actually, you can think about that the U, this U here, can be sort of say, U can be viewed as like a UX plus UY. Right? So that's because it's a complex number. You can always write it many ways. You know? So you can really think about it, it really comes from two components, but otherwise, you can just put it together. Right? So the key difference is here. You have this I here. Now you wonder, what about the conventional P wave? In a conventional P wave, you only have one, just take this spinless P wave in the 2D. There's only one Perron channel, right? So for the conventional P wave, so you have a order parameter, say, let me define, this is a spinless, two-dimensional case. So you have, say, C minus K, let me say, C minus K, and equal to, say, delta of K, let me call it V again. Okay? So that will be the conventional P wave, the single spin in the two dimension. And this one, because of this anti-symmetric, the B has to be R, okay? You can prove that. So what happens is for the P plus IV case, it's typically equal to something, a constant, let me just say, times KX plus KY. With I in front of it, something like that. That's very common, right? And this is actually the reason when you solve the BDG equation for topology, this is the reason why you have a chain number, finite. Because this is linear in k. And if you think about a lattice, you have sine of kx. I guess probably will know if you're on a lattice model, right? In a long wavelength limit, sine of kx just equal to kx, so you expand. So that's why you have this winding number, because this is one, is the first order. So that's why in the P of case, the chain number is 1. It's linear in k, and the kx plus I ky. It's like you have a sigma. If you think about a two-component case, because you have a polygon hole for the spinless case, you kind of decompose in the basis of the Pauli matrices. Then you have sigma x, sigma y channel. This will give you sigma x, this will give you a sigma y channel. Uh-huh. So in our case, we don't have this symmetry for the Bs. You still satisfy the anti-symmetric condition for the fermions. However, when you anti-symmetrize, S up and the P down is no symmetries. Because S and the P are not the same. If I erase the P and the S, basically the band index, then you should have kind of a spin exchange. Should be like if you spin singlet, you get a minus sign for that, right? But here we don't have that. We have additional index, that's actually S and P. So when you exchange two, you don't have that symmetry required. So for that very reason, we don't require. So let me just write here. For single mass P wave, it's not required when you switch the sign of k, because you also have to switch the orbit index, so you already fixed that by a spin balance, because your swimming up is really, I mean, the spin up and the down are not equivalent, because there's a huge chemical difference, right? Anyway, so that is actually the reason. Then you wonder, in our case, so for this very reason, in our case, you will say, okay, this will kind of give you a delta of k in the BDG-like equation. I think Peter was asking me how does it look like, the effective Hamiltonian. So here, you don't have that odd symmetry. That means this one does not look like this. So now let me come to the final part, the topology. So in our case, where does the topology come from?
So you're saying that by filling up to the P band, you get the P wave. So if I fill up to the D band, you get D wave.
You get the S and D. Mm-hmm. You get S and D, so because it's like
Yes.
You just need the high thing, you're right. Because it's like if I follow what the PD is asking, you can think about your Cooper pair is a product of two wave functions. S, in our case, is P, S and the P. So L equals 0 state and L equal 1 state. So the total molecule, if I view the Cooper as a molecule, has a total angular momentum L equal 1. So if you say my wave function is a product of S and D, the total angular momentum of this molecule, which is a Cooper pair, is L equal to 2. So it's like on each largest side, you have a molecule that's rotating if it's in the P plus IP case.
But over here, they have the principle two phases. One was the Px plus I, the Px plus Py, and the other
yes.
one was the plus I Py.
Yes.
You go to the D band, you have more options.
You have more. You have a lot more.
So
that would be you could have a yeah.
Is it clear to define something interesting there?
So you could have like D wave nodes. I think you could have nodal points. All those kind of things can happen. So in our case, this state is fully gapped out. It's topological. For the P wave, it's kind of like an anisotropic. For let's say Px minus or plus Py state, it's actually the gap is say in the 45 degree direction is maximized, right? So you have kind of like a nodal lines, but in the D wave case, you have nodal points, right? So here's like your gap is say in the 45 direction, for the real P wave case is maximized, right? For the P plus I case, the gap is kind of like it's like a donut. It's finite everywhere.
So what you do here is, I'm asking a stupid question now, what's the essential ingredient now in getting instead of the Px plus Py, the Px plus I Py?
Yes.
What was the most important ingredient?
The T3. You need this term to mix the X and Y. And you also need the interaction. Yeah, without the interaction, only have T3, you don't have business. Yeah, you need both interaction, also a way to mix X and Y. So if you are, basically you have that X and Y state mixing, it's almost impossible not to get into P plus IP. Because from the physics we learned in the P band bosons, for any possible interaction case, you always get chiral state. Because if the bosons stay in the donut-shaped state, they can avoid the repulsive interaction better than stay in the elongated state. So if you start with attractive interaction between fermions, now you think about what's the effective interaction between two molecules. It's repulsive. So what happens is like you can map the problem to a p-band bosons for the Cooper pairs with repulsive interaction. So all those interactions will definitely favor, if you have such a mixing term, favor that kind of a chiral state automatically. And it's a main body effect. No matter how weak the interaction is, you can always get that because it's an embodied condensation.
So it's a question and a comment.
Yes.
So the comment first, given that explanation and understanding, it seems to me that a small amount of on-site anisotropy will also play the role of T3 replacement. So perhaps there's...
Yes. I have not thought about that. I think that should be very... Yeah.
And then the question, so as you fill up bands, right? Another option in, rather than doing S and D would be, of course, filling up both P. And so I'm just sort of curious if a conventional P wave is also approachable in the system you described.
Oh, for the conventional P wave, the relative phase actually, the relative motion is actually the P wave. In our case, it's different.
No, I understand. But so, we took the same experiment.
Right.
Same proposed experiment, and I were to start filling up the other chemical potential.
To the P. So both spin up and down going to P band.
Into P band.
Okay.
And is there a conventional P wave case there?
If you have a P wave interaction, I think why not? That actually should be easier because for the conventional P wave, you don't have the firm surface matching requirement.
Yeah, no,
you automatically.
The crucial point is that the S wave interaction is what drives everything.
Yes, suppose you only have the S wave interaction. So that means you only have the interaction between up and down. You miss two spins, and so if that's the condition, then you are going in this case. But if you say if you already have a P wave, strong P wave interaction, you have to be strong enough, right? So if the P wave only give you a weak ordering, that would be a competing order, right? Depends on how strong, how much condensation energy you can save. That's actually the question, right? If you have a P wave interaction, typically P wave order is weaker. For example, like in helium 3, typically talking about a millikelvin. Like helium 4, which is bosons, by the way, of course, you're talking about the Kelvin, you already have both condensate. Have superfluid. For typically P wave case, we know the gap function, the critical temperature and the gap depend on the coupling constant, to the cubic form, if I remember, instead of linear in the exponential part.
So, what controls in which phase is realized? T3
and the U. Actually, sign is not important, if I remember. Yeah, I'll show you there's a very important key, the sign of T3 coming into play. So it's the strength of T3 and the strength of U. So, okay, when T3 is very weak, if you have very strong interaction, you're always in this chiral phase. When the U is still in the weak coupling region, in a sense, smaller than T1, so that means U is a weak perturbation. You can still have that case when T3 is comparable with T0, actually the same distance. So T3 and the tunneling in T0, if they're in the same order. So that means this can happen even the interaction is weak, so long as T3 is comparable with the S-band tunneling, which is very reasonable because it's the same distance when you evaluate the overlap between two functions. So now it comes to the last part, actually, the last 2 minutes.
One thing again. So your order parameter or so your anomalous expectation values don't have the symmetry that you want. So you were saying it there, right? So getting the convection.
Yeah.
So once again, what is the thing that leads you to say that you still have a P plus
Oh, it's because these two guys have the, this is X and this is Y, this PX symmetry, this PY symmetry, the relative phase is I. So I can think that, you know, in here you can also see that the many body wave function has two components. And you can think about the gap, each one.
Still, there you are not preventing, or say, not at least up to now, you are not preventing Vx from being zero and Vy from being different from zero.
Correct.
So in this thing case, that I have in mind is that there it's a single object that is a.
Yes. So you're right. Exactly. In the, you already start appreciating the difference deeply. So in the conventional P wave case, you have to say, starting from the B, the Cooper pair water parameter, you have to decompose this function into two components, real and the imaginary part. And you have to require, to be lucky enough, both components not zero. Then you get a topological chiral phase, right? And that actually is the case associated with the conventional P wave. And also you guarantee it's almost like this is linear, it's all odd and even, because you know you have this symmetry, so you get something like a kx instead of kx squared. So you're not getting a d wave, you get a p wave in this case. Right, so but you cannot tell, you know, in a Hilbert three phase, you also have a non-chiral phases. Right? So it's not automatically this has to be decompose into two components with both imaginary and the real components are non-vanishing. So that's not the theorem to prove this is always true, no. So that symmetry does not tell you have that one, right? So however, still give you some sense. In our case, each one can be just by its own, you know? And I think if I take what Jake was asking, if I have some kind of anisotropy, that means I don't have D4 symmetry, I don't really have a px plus ipy. I have, say, px plus ie times py. So it's the real part and the imaginary part are not of the same weight. That's possible, right? So I could have basically the like superposition of real and the complex phase. So if you have some kind of anisotropy, right, it's possible. So that means my y component can be a fraction of the x component. So that's just a notation in principle. So then it comes because from the very beginning, we already have two components. So in the conventional P wave, you have to be very lucky such that your order parameter can be decomposed into two components for yourself. You just wait until the last minute. But here in the beginning, we prepare, you should have two components to be ready in a single particle because we already have two p-bands, px and py, right? So you already have these kind of two channels. It seems like you prepare the states, make it ready, and you only call the interaction to do the business, that is the pair, right? So that's actually an idea. So then you wonder how this actually, you know, for example, this may not be like a linear in K. And so here I just want to tell you, for the topology part, the chain number, if you evaluate, is 1. From the conventional pure wave case, you know, you already can see, because it's a linear, you can find out the chain number is 1, right? So you can convince very quickly. So especially like you say, Oshikawa, I mean, as people already done many times, this, you know, that's very easy. But so in our case, because you don't have that symmetry, you don't have this big, you don't have this function has to be odd. So there's no guarantee you have a linear term. You could have a mixture of a linear term, cubic term, quadratic term, quadratic term, so all kinds of terms possible, right? There's no symmetry to require. So where does this chain number equal 1 come from, and why? So again, come from here. So let me just draw this picture again. This is T3. This then will be minus T3. And this will be minus T3. And this will be plus T3. So it's a staggering. So if you go ahead, because the P wave, this is plus, this is minus. This is plus, this is minus. This is plus, this is minus. Plus, 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 minus. Because this kind of pattern, the overlap between here is between plus lobe and the minus lobe. And overlap here is plus and the plus. So that's why there's a sign difference between these two. And this staggering tells you in a single particle channel, in a Hamiltonian, you have a turn. Let me just write here. So there will be in the Hamiltonian, there's a crossing term that will mix x and y. That will be T3 term, because you have a 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Actually, you get have 4 times T3, and it will be sine kx sine ky, where I set my lattice constant equal 1. So because this timing in turn, you'll get something like a linear in k, not cosine. So you know, when you deal with the topological insulator, when you see the sine instead of cosine, you kind of like you say, very happy in business, because you very likely you have something going to be interesting, to have someone like you want the number, right? That's actually very, not very likely. So you may need mix of models, you know, that's actually an idea. If you want to have cosine, all those things, normally you don't get any non-trivial results, right? So this is the case, again, you kind of want like to prepare your state from the single particle structure for topology. However, if you take away the interaction, so when you set the U, the interaction term is zero, the model is non-topological. So the single particle boundary structure is not topological. So that is the key, right? So the model before you turn on the interaction is not topological. It's like you are making all the preparation as much as possible, and all you need is wait for the interaction to come, and then you get everything to be topological. So I think with that, thank you. Any questions? I hope I satisfy Peter.
Very quick question. So, do you think the syndrome mass px plus p plus ip wave and the conventional px plus ip, they are, do they belong to the same universality class, and they all still have the same kind of edge modes?
No.
No.
It's a very great question. You know, we're working on this together with Jason and Alicia and other people who are writing a proposal. You know, I really appreciate your question. So here, we can calculate that the Chern number is 1. If you take the effective Hamiltonian, you can solve the BDG equation, get all the eigenstates, or just solve this Hamiltonian. So if you get all the Bloch states, you can define the Burek collection. So you can prove that numerically. You get actually a chiral fermionic mode instead of chiral Majorana. So in the conventional P plus IP case, you get a chiral Majorana. The reason is like this. Do you want to hear the fundamental difference? Do you have time, you guys? So that's just an answer. In our case, you don't get a chiral Majorana. In their case, they get a chiral Majorana. So our case on edge state is more like an integer quantum Hall state. You have a chiral fermionic zero mode, you have an edge state. But it's fermionic, it's not a Majorana. That means the Bogdanov quantum particle is not self-conjugate. The reason is because actually you have two spins. When you take the conjugate, it doesn't go back to itself. Because there's a spin symmetry here, there you have two spins, right? So in the conventional P wave, it's like a, you know, you take the conjugate, say gamma equals gamma stack, right? Because that's the quadriparticle operator. So here, that's the difference if you just say the superficial way to quickly see. So there's a fundamental difference on this regard. So there's a similarity, there's a fundamental difference, even in terms of the topology. That's just only one part of it. Also, in terms of the spatial symmetries, the relative motion compared with the center of mass motion, many other things are different. So the topology part is already shows some similarity and difference in the same time. Yeah. So there's a lot of things we don't understand yet, because what is the excitation, the nature of that, and many other questions.
So is it, I mean, it's a little bit somewhat disappointing that you don't get Majorana stuff, because this is the main motivation for P plus IP.
That's one of the main motivations. Yeah. You get the abelian, non-abelian, especially in that case, you're right. That's a non-abelian anion for the Majorana mode in the vortex core. Yeah. So we don't get that. It's still a topological phase. It's as great as like you have a chiral fermion mode on the edge. So it's like a, in other regard, it's like the integer quantum Hall case, you have a chiral fermion zero mode on the boundary. is a chiral fermion and zero energy, but it's unfortunately is not. It's not like a fractional quantum hole problem. So like P plus IP in the so-called weak coupling, topological weak coupling limit maps to the 5-half state. That's a fractional quantum hole problem. So in our state, if you do the mapping from the topology side, our understanding is more like going to an integer quantum hole problem. Yeah. So then people try to come up with some macroscopic layer structure. You may be able to, you know, like Susan Zhang's idea, some other, you know, it's different layers, how you get into run out of the chiral fermionic modes.
So I guess to follow up with this question in this direction, so is it the lack of the gauge field here that prevents this emergence?
It's actually what we found so far based on discussion. I must give credit to Chet and Eric and Jason, because I've been talking on this together all the time in the last 1 month or so. Also with Xiaopeng Li and Bo. So far we can argue that it's really due to the spin symmetry. If you can somehow break the spin symmetry, that means you have the SC symmetry. And that's actually the problem. That prevents some turn from happening. So you can, yeah, so there are various ideas. And all so far, all the ideas, like Jason and Lisa, the people talking about so far, require the spin splitting. I mean, spin flipping, not splitting. Spin flipping process. Means we should shut up.
Yeah. Just background.
Okay. So those are very important questions. Yeah. I don't have a answer for Peter's.
Okay, can I still
we don't have marijuana, yeah.
So when I do the normal T as plus IP line, they write down the overloop of the generic equations, I get the zero mode, which is my variable.
Yes.
Okay. So in your case, you simply have more equations in the overloop of the gen.
Yes.
It's a 5 by 5.
It's a 5 by 5.
Four matrix.
Yeah. But then you still only get one branch of zero mode, because the chain number is 1. But what happens is actually you are operator, since Peter looks like you really want to know. Let me write down the difference.
Zero mode, some vortex or something.
Yeah, okay, vortex. That's right. That's
so here's the
that's right.
So here's the difference. For the conventional, so you are quasi particle, let me say called gamma of K. That's formed by U, C, deck, K. Minus K, let me just write this one. Plus V star, let me just use V, C minus K. And at a certain point that U is equal to V, they are K dependent. So gamma can be made to V equal gamma star, I mean deck, sorry. So that's marijuana. So that means even in another case, if you're on the edge that has a dispersion in another unconfined dimension, you have to tune out the K at a certain point. Suppose you are boundary is in the x direction, the particle still is a chiral around the y direction. So it still depends on ky. For a certain special point of ky, these two are the same, u equal to v, then gamma equal to gamma deck. But in our case, you have two. Let me just write down actually the equivalent. So this is the, let me just write one here. Is K. This is the U, C, deck, S up, K, plus V, C, P. Let me just write P for simplicity. Because you can think about it, the PX, PY, that's two terms, VX, VY, okay? You can combine it together somehow. So in this case, there's no way to be self-conjugate, because this one is downspin, this is upspin. We take the deck, this one is never be the first one, because it's come from different spin. And you can still decompose. That's equivalent to have two marijuana modes, but they are always together. So you can say write down the one chiral fermionic mode in terms of the representation of two real marijuana modes, that's okay. But that's only a mathematical representation. They're not separate.
Yes. Dirac fermion, and it's not in my lab.
It's a Dirac fermion. Yeah, right. So that's actually a disappointment for those people looking for non-binary anions by using this state. That's actually the current story. So maybe, you know, people are still talking about ideas. You have some kind of macroscopic, like say, bilayer edge constructions. Let me just call it macroscopic surgery. People have many brilliant ideas. Those ideas might need to, you know, start with the hour phase. We have two branches of marijuana. You get into the case of one branch of marijuana. So now here's one branch of chiral fermion. We equal to two branches of marijuana. So there are some ideas people have proposed for different contexts, which may be able to apply to this case. So it's open question. But it is, so for our case, it's already topological. That's actually the, already is a P wave in the topological. All right, thank you.